We're shifting the culture to think about trust, healing, and resilience, right? The community is resilient. The community ultimately has what it needs to be able to police itself, to make itself safe, but we don't have the information and the know-how to do it.
This is for the culture. Hey, this is Mayor Raz J. Baraka. Just want to thank everybody for tuning in. Welcome to another episode of Raz in 60. On this episode, we will be expanding on the topic of a safer Newark, which was previous on our previous Facebook Live conversation, and we want to discuss this further, so we're going to have an opportunity to talk about that more in depth here. In Newark, the city and the people are working collectively to achieve a safer city where public safety is based on trauma and trauma-informed care, and we recognize that we are all facing some form of trauma. Keeping Newark safe is our highest priority, and we have developed a holistic kind of approach to reducing violence, healing, and supporting our community. And with that said, we have some very, very special guests on today. Our guests will elaborate on this topic, their department, their offices, and things that they're doing to help us accomplish this goal, creating a safer Newark, safer community. And we're going to talk more about our holistic approach and what we can do as community to help move this approach along. Our first guests include our public safety director, Fritz Frage, and Newark Police Chief Emmanuel Manny Miranda. And on the second half of the show, we will be joined by Director of Office of Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery, Lakeisha Urie, to talk about how they support the work of the police department and what alternative policing looks like. Director Urie will discuss how she serves officers in our community and how they work in collaboration with public safety. And I'll let her talk more about that when she gets on, and is a very dynamic guest. Look forward to having this discussion.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show today.
Yeah,
it definitely stays on theme of what we're focusing on in Newark. And I'm excited about today. I know I'm going to learn a lot, you know. But let's go into the Newark news. Let's talk about some of the most recent Newark-based news stories that are out now. So we're going to just go into the Newark 360 Master Plan. The city's planning board approved the Newark 360 Master Plan. This plan is the blueprint that will shape the equitable physical development of Newark for the next 10 years. For Newark, residents' input was crucial. The community really got a chance to help shape this plan. There were community meetings, there were Facebook Live meetings where people were able to give their input and comments and request things that they wanted to see in this master plan. Their ideas were taken, of course, into account, and there were also focus groups, surveys, there were meetings in each ward around Newark. So, and if anyone out there wants to learn more, they can go to newark360.org.
Right.
So, Mayor, how important was it to have the community engaged in this master plan from your perspective?
Yeah, we had a few thousand touch points in the community. Many people gave their input and information. It's important because this is how, this is actually the foundation of how we're going to move the city forward, the blueprint, as was stated, you know, in terms of zoning, restaurants, commercial space, residential, making sure we have more affordable housing, more green space, more trees, more family-oriented places in the city. So, and you got a lot of input from residents around those things.
Oh, that's awesome. That's exciting because then people feel like their community, they help develop it, you know what I'm saying? Like they're part of it. All right, moving along, let's talk about guaranteed income. So the Newark's guaranteed income pilot program called the Newark Movement for Economic Equity addresses economic insecurity by providing 430 Newark residents with $6,000 twice a year for 2 years or $250 biweekly payments, right? So a data dashboard was released recently that showed the data. So I'm going to read off some of that data that was released. So we have 40% of the funds from this first year was spent at retailers and discount superstores on things like food, clothes, household goods, and hygiene products.
Right.
26% was spent at grocery stores. 10% was spent on transportation costs like gas and car repair. 12% went to housing and utilities, and other expenses included loan repayments, medical expenses, and tuition.
That's great.
It is. So what did you think when you saw this data, when you read it, what was your initial reaction?
Well, that the pundits were wrong, that people who have negative things to say were incorrect. Some of it was based in racism. Some of it just sheer foolishness and ignorance that people was going to use. They would waste the money. They're going to buy, you know, all kind of illicit items and, you know, all of these kinds of things. And what we thought came true, people used the money on things that they needed every single day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They was able to fill that economic void they may have.
Yeah. And put it back into the economy, right back into the economy.
Right back. All right. So, Mayor, you can go ahead and welcome on our first guest.
Yep. And you know, Conversations with Mayor Raj J. Barak on a Facebook Live every Friday. I bring guests on. The last time I had Director Frage and Chief of Police Manny Miranda talking about crime, violence, community involvement, and more. And they're here with us today. So let's welcome them for the first time on Raz and 60 podcast, Director Frage and Chief of Police Manny Miranda.
Let's welcome them on the show.
I want to welcome the Director Frage, Chief of Police Manny Miranda on with us today. First, welcome to Raz in 60, our podcast that we do in Newark. I don't know if you knew we had a podcast.
Hopefully you did.
Yeah, you did.
You downloaded it, right?
I mean, you're trying to make this thing happen. Yeah. So we want to jump right in. So in this conversation, Desiree and I, so just want to first ask about some of the statistics currently in Newark, you know, that you think are important for us to know or talk about that will help us understand what's going on in the city around crime and violence.
Yeah. Okay, I'm Director Fritz Frage. Public safety in Newark. Basically, the city is in a decline of approximately 4% decrease in violent crime in the city itself. 2% down in decrease in murders, 13% in aggravated assault. The only increase we have in violent crime is robberies. And in robberies, we have a total of an 8% increase. And Chief Miranda and I have focused a plan, which is intelligence-led, technology-driven, to help combat those numbers in the city. And Miranda will go briefly over those stats shortly. Chief?
Yeah, so far this year, the run numbers are 370. We have 370 robberies this year compared to last year, 326 robberies. The two precincts that are leading the robberies right now this year is the third precinct, which is East Ward, and our fourth precinct, which encompasses the West Ward. And those are the two main precincts that are actually have an uptick in the robbery section this year.
Okay. So what does that mean for, I guess, like, maybe you want to go ahead and ask.
Yeah, like what is the police response to that? So
far this year, we added an additional four detectives to our robbery division with another supervisor. We took away some of the responsibilities of them responding to shootings investigation during non-operation hours on the shooting response team, so they could focus more on the robberies. They could do an analysis of where the robberies are occurring. They could go after these. They have more time now to canvas for video, canvas for the suspects, to bring them to justice. We also have known offenders. You know, a lot of times we see that some of these robbery suspects, once they release, they go right back to knowing what they do. You know, and so we're going after them. We're doing a known offender type of chart that we give out to our detectives, and we also give out to our patrol. When they're out there and they see them, they know what to pay attention to when they're out there.
It's also technology-led, intelligence-driven. In a sense, we take the intelligence of all the data of where the robberies are occurring, we analyze that data, and then we focus on targeted location, times of day that are happening. We'll have enhanced patrols in the area, the times of day they're getting robbed, to ensure that when they're walking home, there's a patrolman there. We've also assisted and requested assistance from the Sheriff's Department to patrol some of the parks in the area. So during the time of day that there's certain robberies, the Sheriff's Department would also patrol the area, step outside and walk through the area to help prevent some of these crimes. All these crimes are opportunity, and they have cash on them, so they're just sitting ducks. People are waiting around to rob them. So the physical presence, the deterrent of physically being there will help deter some of the crime.
Do you see any signs that this is working?
I think so, Mayor. So far this year, the robbery division has been able to close out 170 jobs. They've been able, which is a 46% closeout rate. Right. The national average is about 27.
Right.
For every 10 jobs, only 3 are closed out. We're closing out about 5 or 6 jobs out of every 10 jobs. So they're doing a phenomenal job in the robbery division.
That's good. Sounds good.
That is good. And so we in the city have been, you know, talking a lot about COVID and how we have been mapping things around COVID, you know, how we mapping what's happened with COVID and how do we respond to that and so forth and so on. And is the police department doing something similar to that?
Well, historically, the police have always used numbers and intelligence to guide the investigations. So in this case, normally we would do a plot chart map of where the shootings are happening, where the violent crimes are occurring. And in that case, we would target those cases and specifically have patrols go in the area at that time or specifically target investigators to target those investigations based on names and dates of people that are actually committing a crime. The reality of it is a small percentage of the population completes 90% of the crimes.
Right.
Using that intelligence that you directed through COVID, where we were plotting where all the positive sites were occurring, and then in that sense, you focused all of the resources to those areas where it was ironbound. You'd be there giving the free testing sites. So it's the same type of format, but this is policing.
Right.
So that's what we're using to target that.
Right.
And Mr. Mayor, just to follow up with that, I wish I could show something like this map of what we've been talking about. Like we had said it before, the same way the COVID was attacked. So here's the last 6 months of this particular area, which we call the 513 sector, how many shots fired we had in that incident, how many actually people got hit. And now this is the last 28 days. We only have one incident in the last 28 days to show that what we're doing is working.
Right.
But not only is it working, but now we have to look for displacement, where they're moving to, where they're going. Mm-hmm. So that's where the intelligence comes in.
Okay.
Right. That's great. That's great.
Sounds good. I have a question for you, Mayor. Why do you think using this hotspot method is the best approach for reducing crime?
Well, I think the director said it. I mean, it's just intelligence-led, and we need to do that. I mean, I'm glad the police department is moving away from this kind of throw out a wide net and grab as many people as you can, and hopefully you catch the criminals.
Right.
You know, just really identifying areas where this stuff is happening at and putting our resources in that area. A lot of people get upset about that politically, you know, because they want to see people everywhere, but problems not happening everywhere, right? So you have to focus on where the problems are.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right, I have a question for the both of you, Director and Chief. Newark, New Jersey is doing things with law enforcement that many other cities aren't, such as collaboratively working with organizations and offices such as the Newark Community Street Team, the Office of Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery to reduce violence and crime. Can you both explain how you work with them and what does this partnership look like for those, you know, from the outside looking in? What does it look like?
Chief will go into the exact details of what it looks like, but we're very thankful that they started the OVP, and the director here is also here to describe what she does. Mm-hmm. But how it starts is just constant communication.
Right.
Constant communication on where the violence is happening. And in the past, the police were expected to be the police, the social worker, the one that's talking to you, to guide you, to assist you. And now with the mayor's support, he's assigned a group that does that portion for us, where they can have the sensitivity, the conversations to go forward. In this case, when we have a violent incident, it's very helpful that we can reach out for OVP to come out, have conversations with the family, provide them the support the city may have, whether it's social workers or just support to put the family somewhere for the night. They have those resources in the outreach program to help those families in those dire needs. And sometimes there's a witness that you know, they may have information on who may be responsible. They assist in all aspects. The biggest key is the support of the community, because there is a victim that's involved in this shooting and this stabbing, and that victim needs attention and social services to help guide and support their lives, especially when they have children. They're assigned to several stations, but I'll let Chief Miranda discuss where they're located and how we're working them. We meet with them biweekly to have consistent conversations on how we target. And then we review this almost monthly and then quarterly review of, is it working?
Right.
Are they getting support? Are they replying back with, yes, thank you for helping us out. Thank you for giving the support to, needed to guide us through this tragic disaster that happened. Chief?
Yeah, so while everybody else was talking about defunding the police, you know, Newark came up with this idea of the Office of the Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery, which has been helping us out tremendously. You know, it's always been that it was said it's us against them. You know, we got away from that. Where before we wouldn't want to release information to the community, and we didn't want to release information because we were afraid it was going to leak out or whatever the case was, right? So now we have this office that we worked hand in hand with, that they see what we see. And we send them to these areas where they're experiencing the violence. We're telling them, hey, you know, we got intelligence that this group is beefing with this group. See what you could do. You know, every week we send them known offenders, not just to put it out there, because we want them to follow up with them. Because sometimes it's that person might just need a job. Now they're able to offer that job. That person can't get a job because they don't have a driver's license. They don't have a birth certificate. Well, the Office of Violence Prevention is helping them to achieve those, you know, to get those birth certificate and to get that driver's license, where before no one was helping them. So we have them in every precinct. There's a social worker assigned to every precinct. There's actually a form that every officer has that whenever they respond to a house, so let's say for a domestic, and they see that there's mental issues, that's something that we cannot deal with, now we have a form that we could actually forward to the Office of Violence Prevention, and they could follow up with that. And they have connections with University Crisis Section or Beth Israel or any other hospital that can help them with domestic violence, that helps them with relocating, that helps them with dealing with mental health issues, where before the police was seen as to take care of everything when we weren't trained to take care of those things, you know? And there's actual training back and forth between us too. You know, the Office of Violence Prevention come to us and they train us. This is what they have to offer. This is what we do when we get to the scene, and vice versa. Now the officers know exactly what to expect when Office of Violence Prevention get there, where before you can't be on my scene, get back, was a police issue. Now we're working, now we're communicating, now we're helping each other out. And that's a big plus for the city.
A huge plus.
Yes.
It's a 24/7 operation. So when we're going at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're getting up and they're coming out at 2 o'clock in the morning to assist. Wow. Whether they're needed or not, they'll make the phone call. Do you need us? Where do you want us? We give them the information and they show up and support. Yeah. So the Office of Violence Prevention is very critical to how we do our things right now. We even have the social workers and some of the members assigned to work inside the precincts, which we've started just recently. They've got an office there. They can have direct communication with police officers. I mean, we've opened doors to some of the precincts where if there's domestic violence concerns, they can come in and sit down and do exchange of children. So there's no violence to prevent those type of occurrences from happening. So we've opened our doors to change how we do policing and to help and work with the community.
So every week we also have a CompStat where all our commanders from both patrol and detective bureau come together and we talk about these crimes and we talk about our issues. They also have a seat at our table also. The way they report every week, what they're doing, and how can they help the commands, both on the patrol and also on the detective side.
Right, that's very good. Mm-hmm. That's very good.
Looks like
just before you get into the other question, just like, you know, in general, in terms of the city, like what do you think residents can do to help, you know, on their individual, you know, what capacity to help reduce violence and crime? If I'm just a regular resident, what can I do to help out?
I think the biggest thing is that they have to be our eyes and ears. They live there. They see things, you know, and they could remain anonymous by calling the 1-800. I think it's 1-888 Newark Tips, NWK Tips, where they could report these issues. They know what's going on. They know where they're hanging out. They know who just moved in, who just moved out, you know, and they could report those issues anonymously.
So we need to reiterate, it's anonymous. Like, people
100%,
yes.
So,
like, because that's the problem.
Right.
The community people
they don't
want to
be labeled snitch.
Right.
They're afraid of retaliation if mm-hmm. they know that, you know, they call the police. So it would never be in a report, Miss Jones from, you know, 222 whatever street called us, and this is why we got you. It will never be that. You know, it will always remain anonymous. But again, you're the eyes and ears for the police department out there, and you see things. You are in the neighborhood. You know who belongs. You know who don't belong. You know where they're parking these stolen vehicles. You know where they're stashing the drugs. You know where they're stashing these guns, and you can always remain anonymous. And if we get a gun, that's $1,000 for the person that they could also receive.
I mean, that aspect of it, we also want the community to be aware that, we're in the business of precision policing. So if we're talking to you in reference to a shooting, believe that it's supported by data. It's not supported we're just randomly talking to you. If we're talking to you, you've either been involved in a shooting, shot at somebody, been investigated during a shooting, or part of the shooting circumstance in that city. And as I said before, it's a small percentage of the population that commits 90% of the crimes in the city.
Right.
So when we're talking to you, everything we do is precision-led with technology and intelligence.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, sounds good.
It sounds really good. So you feel good about where policing is going in Newark, then, in other words? That's what I feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Listen, just this year alone, we already have taken 618 guns off the streets.
Wow.
Same time last year, 465.
Wow. 618, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Good.
The way I like to see that, for every gun we've taken off, that's one less shooting victim, one less homicide victim.
Yeah. Right.
One less senseless.
And the majority of those, a lot of those, I can't say the majority, a lot of those are just phone calls. Hey, this person's got a weapon.
Yeah.
And then we have to reasonably articulate why we're approaching them and things of that nature. And then we'll follow through an investigation. And if we have enough reasonable suspicion, probable cause, we'll facilitate the arrest. And those are just calls made in, hey, there's a person with a gun. Or there's a person with something in this area. And we'll show up and we'll investigate.
That's good.
Yeah.
We need the residents to do that.
Yep, we need them
keep
to call.
Keep the community safe, keep the neighborhood safe. Absolutely, we need to do that.
And $1,000, you know, for every gun you get.
Yeah, absolutely, that's right.
Pay a bill with it too.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, for real.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think that's it, Mayor, for this part of the show.
Yeah, but we wanted them to talk a little bit about the police recruitment stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, I know we got some classes in. Let's talk about what class is in, what's going in next, and how does a regular Newark resident apply to be a cop?
We currently have a civil service list, a test that came out from civil service, and in that list, they've already applied. We'll be opening that list shortly, and we'll be using that list for our future classes, which will probably be in January sometime. Mm-hmm. That class will be, hopefully we can get 100 recruits out of that class. We currently have a class of, I believe, 42 that's getting ready to graduate. They're going through Essex County Police Academy. I'll let Chief Miranda discuss the two that we have going to a different county, which is Hudson County. But when they do get out, once again, we start the training right there, the aspect of training about the relationship with the community, the conversation with the community.
Right.
They're on foot patrol, having those conversations to make them approachable. Because the end result, if the community doesn't trust you, it's harder to police.
Right.
When they trust you and they have conversations with you and you're there and they know you, they'll actually reach out for you. And that's what we're going to need to facilitate a better community. We're taking strides in that aspect right now. We're revamping our internal training on community relations, community support, which we're doing right now. When they got the academy, they're going to have a 3-week program just learning about approaches, discussions, articulation, and investigations to help us do our job better and to help them understand how to review and analyze data to assist in their investigations and patrol. Chief Moran will give the numbers of the department because he handles this, how we disperse the members.
Yes. As the director said, right now we have 42 that are going to be graduating now in November 9th. We also have another 62 that went in on September 15th. And in addition to that, we have 4 in Bergen County that are going to be graduating soon. And we just going to put another additional 10 in Hudson County Academy. Obviously, we need the officers out here. We want the presence to be out here. You know, we got the green light from the mayor. He's supporting us to get these officers trained and to get them out into the streets and get them into the neighborhoods, you know, so they could patrol and do the community stuff. But as the director said, you could go through the civil service route, or you could go also directly through the Newark recruitment that we're doing. You know, and it's actually, just to give you the website, is NPD recruit@ci.newark.nj.us. I'll say that again. It's NPD recruit@ci.newark.nj.us. And they could apply through that website where they could do the application. And some of the requirements that are needed before you apply is that you must be a Newark resident for a minimum of 90 days. Before you apply, you have to be between the ages of 18 and 34. You must have a valid driver's license, a high school diploma, or GED. And just fill out the application on there, and somebody will follow up with you from our candidate investigation.
Okay.
And the city has, the business administrator has set aside $100,000 for Newark residents that have hardship to help them pay the costs to get through the academy as well. So that's good stuff.
Yeah, that could be because the academy, the cost could be expensive, right? With the uniforms.
Yes, between the uniforms, the equipment, the psych test, the medical, it could be expensive.
Right.
So that's something great that the BA, Business Administrator Eric Pennington, has been able to allocate those funds to help the Newark residents to go through the process.
Definitely.
Good. Yeah.
Any last things you want to say before we put y'all off our show, man?
Well, just thank you for the opportunity to come here and actually discuss and express what we're doing for Newark. It's a joint program where it's a collaborative effort. Like I said, this whole process of how we police is collaborative amongst all the command staff in public safety. We just thank you for the opportunity and thank you for the resources to actually do the job. I mean, allowing us to have 42 coming out now. We've got 10 in Hudson County. We've got another 60 going in, hopefully, and then in January, once the civil service opens up that list, another 100 recruits going in, which helps. But the other aspect of it, we have about 250 retirements that could possibly happen too. So the amount we're getting would just be replacing what we're losing, and then we have to start back in the grind again to hire more personnel to replace the members that are losing. Because at one point we had a big gap where it was a 7-year period we didn't hire, so that group is getting ready to leave. So there's a gap of well, if we don't put classes through, which the mayor has been instrumental in supporting us and funding us to get these classes through.
I just want to ask one more thing. Is it challenging to make it attractive to people to apply? Are people like not attracted to being a police officer? What do you think one of the challenges is?
Well, the challenge for policing is universal. It's not just Newark. Mm. When I was the Lieutenant Colonel of State Police, our numbers, when I went through the academy, we had a line of about 15, 20,000 waiting to take the test. Now we have a line of about 10,000. So just the perception of policing nowadays, the negative publicity, the defunding police campaigns has given people in general, in all people, not just, you know, minority groups, whites, it doesn't matter what group they are. The numbers are down for everybody as far as who's applying to be law enforcement. With this intelligence-led community policing standard that we have right now, we're hoping that approach, that they understand that we're there to support and serve them. As I said before, the majority of violent crime is conducted by a small minority population. So those are the people we target. And hopefully with our efforts to communicate with the community in Newark itself, I think almost all police standards are doing the same standard, the communication, community support, community policing. And also with the OVP assisting us, we're hoping to bridge that gap and hopefully change the ideas that people have in their head or the negative perception they have in their head reference policing.
Right. Okay.
That's great.
Sounds good.
All right, y'all. Thank you for being on. Yeah, we gonna bring Keisha
photos.
On there.
Get
a few photos before y'all go, like we usually do. All right. We welcome to the second part of our show, Raz in 60. We have with us Director Keisha. Look, Keisha Urie with us. I don't know. It's probably your first time on. First time on Raz in 60 podcast. So, you know. We want you to give us a little background on what you guys actually do over there at the Office of Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery. I know a lot of people have questions. They don't know what's happening over there, but what do you provide and what do you do?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. My name is Keisha Urie, Director for the Office of Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery. The Office of Violence Prevention has been in existence approximately 2 years, but boots on the ground probably a year. And so as we have been building this plane and flying it at the same time and also adjusting as we go, we have been able to hire social workers who are our route to be able to help us address violence as a public health issue. And so we know violence is a national issue everywhere. And so as we are working in the city of Newark to address the root causes, we have services in the office. We are located at 10 17th Avenue, which is a former first precinct of the police department. And we've been able to hire outreach workers, social workers, victim advocates to be able to help people who have been affected by crime and violence in the city by helping them to deal with their mental health, their emotional health, their social issues, financial issues, and safety. And so at the office is a walk-in center where people can walk in to get assistance and services. We have been able to help relocate people if they don't feel safe. We are assisting people with getting jobs, IDs, their vital statistics, employment, getting to schools, direct them to housing. We know that housing is a crisis and that many people need safe places to live. We are working with them in terms of connecting them to additional resources and in terms of trauma recovery services. And we also have partners that we're working with to be able to help people to get any assistance that they need. So we're doing wraparound, right? We are helping people to get their lives back on track after they've experienced trauma, after something has happened. What is it that they need to get their lives back on track? And we ultimately fill in the gaps and pull together the pieces for them and offer support during that time.
What about some of the prevention and intervention stuff that happens that you know?
So the office, we ultimately have broken it down into prevention, intervention, and treatment. And so we want to ultimately stop things before it starts. So if we can get in front of it, so we can mediate some of these issues that's happening in the neighborhood, if we can get there to break up the fights at the school, if we are there for the safe passage and we know something's going to happen ahead of time, then we can get in front of it. If we know that families are at risk, then we can go and knock on the doors to get them the services ahead of time. And so the prevention services that we are doing, outreach, right? So if people have information, then information is power. And if they have information, then they can navigate to get the things that they need. And so we're getting the information to people. We're knocking on doors. We're out in the community. We're at the schools. We're at the hospital. We're at the anything that's happening in the neighborhoods. And if we know something is happening, then we are doing mediation and mediations for those incidents. We are helping them to get their financial needs so that they're not robbing people, shooting people, carjacking people. And when we know that those things are happening, then we are ultimately going to them directly and talking to them to ask them, why are you stealing cars? Why are you shooting people? Why are you robbing people? What is it that you need? And so getting to the root cause before it happens, and then after it happens, we're intervening and having another conversation with them to get them to the next level of, so that it doesn't become a repeat.
Right.
So,
that's all right. I'm going to cut you off from time to time. When we just had the public safety director and the chief on, and, you know, they talked about the Office of Violence Prevention as well. And on your Facebook page, you have the, you're trying to merge public safety and public wellness. What does that mean, and what does a partnership between you guys and the police look like?
So that's the strategy. The strategy is for us to marry public safety and public health together, because you can't have one without the other. In order for people to feel safe, many people want to see law enforcement and want to see police, but we are letting them see that we are at the center of public safety. So Office of Violence Prevention is a community-based public safety approach, where we're putting those two things together. And so what we're doing is we're supporting communities to have an active role in creating public safety so that they have input. They get to have a voice in how those things go. Historically, law enforcement has been a paramilitary organization that just functions business as usual. But we get to have a say-so in what that looks like in our community. And so we are ultimately helping and supporting the community to have an active role. We're mobilizing the community and law enforcement to focus on the hotspots. So we know that the hot spots are the areas where things are constantly happening. And so we are putting resources into those areas, and we're working collectively together to be able to do that. We're shifting the culture to think about trust, healing, and resilience, right? The community is resilient. The community ultimately has what it needs to be able to police itself, to make itself safe, but we don't have the information and the know-how to do it. And we're trying to empower the community to let them know that you are at the center of resilience, hope, trust, healing, and we're trying to restore trust back into the community, because for so many years, there hasn't been trust with law enforcement. And so we're really looking to be able to rebuild the trust. And then we're investing in the capacity of people and resources working to prevent violence. So we are investing into our community.
Right,
we have
right.
a $20 million investment, right, that we are investing into the community so that they understand and know that the resources are there, and we are going to enhance those resources by the city backing us in terms of making an investment for the people.
That's great. Dash, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I want to ask both of you a question. I know, Mayor, the Office of Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery was one of your visions when you for your administration, the creation of this office. Can you explain to those listening and watching why you felt that the development of this office was important? And Lakeisha, you could also jump in as well.
Well, I think the director really
right,
stated it, honestly. But,
did.
You know, at the end of the day, You know, we're just treating violence as public health.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps us. It actually has an impact on policing, too.
You know,
the work that they do helps police see it in a different way as well. Mm-hmm. You can see that based on the way the director and the chief talked about it.
I would even say it kind of, like, humanizes the police department, you know, because people look at them, like you said, paramilitary.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You're afraid, kind of, you know, so... And with
Nine, 10 years ago, we wouldn't be able to do this kind of thing.
Right.
So the police would be very resistant to it. So, but you can see how they're changing because we're treating it as public health. Like the same way we're dealing with COVID, and you see they're making the relationship between how they even police and how we responded to COVID. So those conversations, I remember we was on the street in rallies talking about how, why this shit happened.
Right.
But listening to the police talk about it that way gives you some happiness that we're moving in that direction, definitely. We're not all the way there yet, but, you know, just
time.
Them talking about it, using COVID and policing in the same language, same sentence, is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing is having access. And so, like the mayor said, when we were in the streets and we were yelling about violence as a public health issue, but ultimately our first demand was we had McCarthy must go, and we wanted to have input as to who's our police director. Mm-hmm. We want to have input as to how we have access to that. And so that was one of the demands almost, you know, 10 years ago. And so to be able to have access to call the police director on the phone and know somebody's going to answer the phone, to know that I can call the police chief and say I need some help and assistance, to be able to call someone and they answer, that alone, to have access, is the biggest thing that we were fighting for. And now to be able to have conversations, to sit at the same tables, to share budgets, to be able to ask them, can you move some stuff out the way so that I can be able to do the work I need to do with the community in a real way, right? And so to be able to go on a scene, hi, my name is Keisha Urey, Office of Violence Prevention. Is there anyone here who needs assistance and help? Can I speak to who's in charge with law enforcement?
Right.
And that person comes and have a conversation and say, she's all right, let her through. That would never happen before. And then I say, my team is over there. Can you tell me what they need to do and how they need to do it so that they can have access as well?
Right.
Never before we would be able to do that, and now we can do that. Can you please turn on your body cameras so I can show you this mediation that I'm about to do with a person who has mental health issues? I got it. We don't have to lock them up. We don't have to send them to the hospital.
Right.
We got it.
Right. Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
I mean, that's huge, a huge leap in like the way policing is done. Huge step.
Yeah. And if you look at it and compare it to what's happened around the country and other cities, it's an even bigger leap than you can imagine.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So I think I had some questions here, but I think a lot of it you've answered for the most part. You kind of talked about the mental health part. But I do want to, I know that there's a community walk happening tomorrow, and it's going to involve public safety, the Office of Violence Prevention, law enforcement partners, the New Jersey Attorney General, Essex County Prosecutor's Office, council members. I mean, everyone's going to be here at this walk tomorrow.
Yeah.
So can you touch more on the purpose and the intent behind this walk? The both of you talk about it, either one?
I think it's the education part. Like, you know, everybody, like, people get upset if you have a 24 hours of peace, if you have a walk, if you have this. They don't see, say, how is this stopping? When you have COVID, how does it help us when we send Reverend Roundtree and the rest of the people out in the street to pass out literature?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What it does is informs people about what it is they need to do and not do to protect themselves. And it changes the culture. So before you, around the country, you had this culture of nobody wants to wear a mask, nobody wants to do this, nobody wants to do that. We out there giving them information. We say, look, people in this neighborhood dying. They say, well, I'm going to get my mask. You know what I'm saying? I ain't going out here with no mask on. We showed them the numbers. We talked to them about it. So when you have these kind of things, it's the education part of it to make people believe, guess what? It's okay to talk about peace, to have trauma, to deal with conflict and all the issues that you're feeling and thinking. And there's a place you could go.
Right.
Like, you don't have to deal with this on your own. Like, you ain't got to get a gun and shoot nobody. Like, you can go down here, talk to a few people. If you need to be relocated, you need some help, some support, we can do that.
Right.
Like, and that education is important. You educate parents about how to respond to their children and people who might be, you be walking and somebody dealing with domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come pull you aside like, yo, I got this issue. Here's my number. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? All of that is critical when we dealing with what's going on in the city.
Absolutely. And this walk is just a continuum of the work that we've been doing. So we did a 24 hours of peace September 2nd and 3rd, right? We had 7,000 to 10,000 people that came out. Yeah. And right before that, we did a citywide walk in all five of the wards, mm-hmm. right? And we picked up people along the way, and we gave out literature along the way. And to see the faces of the people as we walk by, right? So much empowerment, so much hope. So the visibility is important because, like you said, you never know what people are dealing with.
Right.
And prior to that, we had the Latin Fest, and it had a Office of Violence Prevention overview. We had our partners out there with the information, because people think that in other neighborhoods and in other wards that this stuff is not happening, but violence is happening in every ward of our city. Yeah. It just looks different. So in our Latin, you know, communities in the North Ward and the East Ward, we have an increase in robberies and different things like that. And people are being assaulted. And so they don't see that as violence, right? And so it becomes normalized. So we are really looking to destigmatize, to not normalize the violence. And so it's not business as usual. Somebody got to be outraged, right? Mm-hmm. And it can't keep being the same ones of us outraged, but it continues to be. But my office, the Brick City Peace Collective, all of our partners, law enforcement, Reverend Slaughter with his position, we're coming together with other law enforcement, with the Attorney General's office, with the prosecutor's office, to show that this is a united front.
Right.
And ultimately, when these things happen, we're all at the scene. When there's a homicide, all of these entities have to come out, but we need to be out when there's not anything happening.
Right.
And so that's what this walk is about tomorrow. That's what our rallies leading up to, you know, have been when we went into neighborhoods every week leading up to our citywide walk. And so we're going to continue to be visible. We're going to continue to be vigilant and show the community that violence is not going to be normal in our communities. And we're going to go out to every neighborhood where it's taking place. And for us not to just do it when law enforcement shoots somebody or when law enforcement do something, that we have to have a community-based approach, and that the ownership is on the community, because we know who the people are. We know what's happening, and we can't have business as usual.
And I just want to add, I was at a funeral the other day for the 13-year-old girl who got shot in the head by her friend playing with the gun. And I saw one of the guys spoke that got up, who's involved in RARA, who's involved in the anti-violence stuff, violence prevention, office violence prevention, all the kind of work. He got up and gave a nice little kind of speech to the people in the community. And it was, you know, it was all community people out there about our ability to protect each other and take care of our families and telling our kids it's not okay to do this and okay to do that. I was proud of that because I see that his relationship with the folks in OVP has caused him to be more courageous about the things that he says in front of people. I mean, it takes courage to get up and talk to your peers and tell them that all the stuff we've been doing is wrong and we need to be doing something different, especially at a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, you know, I was very impressed with that. So that's what the education part does, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It gives people the permission and the information to get up there and do the things that, you know, to help us reduce the violence.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. Yep.
We want to thank you for coming on, Keisha. You know, we knew you was going to talk a long time, but so we, because you got a lot to talk about. So
a lot. The office does a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And, you know, people don't know that. Like, you know, I know you had to present to the council because people have questions about what is this Office of Violence Prevention? Y'all taking this money? I just want to give you a last opportunity to say something, you know, especially around the fact that, you know, around the country, people are defunding and doing this and doing that. And we're trying to do something in Newark. That you know, I think is something that could be duplicated.
Mm-hmm. So the work that we're doing certainly is groundbreaking. And I know that our work comes from laying the groundwork of grassroots and activism. And ultimately, when you understand and you're a part of community, then it's easier for you to implement some of the strategies. What I want to say is that this is a joint effort between Office of Violence Prevention and Brick City Peace Collective. So the Brick City Peace Collective is the coordination wing to this work, right? Their accountability, partnership, collaboration. And without this Brick City Peace Collective and without that other wing to the Office of Violence Prevention, because the Office of Violence Prevention is a clearinghouse for community-based organizations to be able to get support, training, technical assistance, and funding. Mm. But the Brick City Peace Collective helps the organizations to stay together. So they do have a meeting on a monthly basis. These organizations have to report out the work that they're doing. And then ultimately, we are now holding them accountable because they're getting funding. And so we know that funding has been a source of conversation where everyone wants to know, where's the money, what you're doing with the money, what you're doing with the money. And so we are ultimately granting the funding to people who have been doing this work for a long time without any funding, but teaching them how to be accountable for the funding, but to help people in a real way that is visible, that we can see the real outcomes.
Right.
And so Brick City Peace Collective, Office of Violence Prevention, the way that we're working together with law enforcement ultimately is the real duplication, right? It's the model in a real way so that you can see that those relationships matter. We just had a retreat last week with all of the organizations together, and the retreat brought everyone together to get training, to show that we're going to do this work together, but to show how we do it collectively with you being a separate entity, but that it can happen.
Yeah.
And so we're really bringing people together. We're really showing how we work together and that relationships matter. And so the way that we're doing this work, the city of Newark is a model for several cities, and they are looking at us. And so I want to say thank you to the mayor for having the vision to be able to bring this together in a way that shows that the city of Newark is beyond the myths, right? Mm-hmm. The negativity that people think that we've always had greatness, and we are a city of pride, and that we are going to decrease crime and violence in our city. We have done it.
Right.
We've already done it. We'll continue to do it, and we're not giving any money back.
Yeah. Thank you. Glad to have you on with us. We got to take a few flicks. Appreciate it. All right, all right. Just want to thank everybody for listening to and watching another great show. Thank Director Fritz Frage, Chief Police of Police Manny Miranda, Director Lakeisha Urie for coming on Rising 60. Thank you all for listening. And if you please share this episode and all of the episodes of Rising 60 with your social circle, you can download it and send it out to as many people as you can. We appreciate you for listening and going forward. And I want to say, Newark forward minus violence equals our future. God bless and Godspeed.